Hi, everyone, and welcome to Focus Forward, an executive function podcast where we explore the challenges and celebrate the wins you'll experience as you change your life through working on improving your executive function skills. I'm your host, Hannah Choi.
Yay, we're back with our fifth season. Whew, that hiatus really flew by. I seriously can't believe it's already October. Part of me wishes it was still August so I could be lying on the beach every weekend, but alas, here we are heading into the cooler weather. It's time to break out the boots, pumpkin spice, and hoodies. At least here in the Northeast, we'll be doing that. Anyway, something that's cool about October is that it's ADHD Awareness Month. This is a special month at Beyond Booksmart since so many of our clients have that diagnosis or can relate deeply to the challenges of having ADHD. Our three episodes this month will all be tied to the topic, so I hope you get to tune in. We are also doing a webinar at the end of the month about making presentations and trainings more engaging for everybody, not just those with ADHD. This interactive live event is being put on by our corporate executive function coaching division, where we help employees and leadership have better work experiences through improved executive function skills. Okay, so back to the episode. Today, I am joined by school psychologist and author Dave Kraske. With over 20 years of experience, Dave has worked with countless students and families with ADHD. And what struck me most in our conversation, beyond how easy Dave is to talk to, is how practical and down-to-earth his strategies are. Nothing he shares feels particularly overwhelming or out of reach, which is really critical when you've got ADHD or are parenting a child with this diagnosis. He gives parents and kids tools they can use right away to build independence and strengthen executive function skills. And even if your child doesn't have ADHD, you're going to find his advice applicable to most situations. On this podcast, we are always aiming to support as many families as possible, and Dave's advice certainly does this. His philosophy is all about being proactive rather than reactive. We've talked about that before. When we teach kids these skills early and in a safe environment, mistakes and setbacks become learning opportunities. He reminds us that protecting kids from every bump in the road doesn't prepare them for real life. Instead, kids gain confidence and true self-esteem by facing challenges with support and scaffolding, not avoidance. As hard as this can be for us, we do know it's true, and Dave's suggestions might make it a little easier. So listen today to learn from Dave. I know you're going to walk away with practical ideas you can try right away and a fresh perspective on what it really means to prepare kids for the future. Oh, and you'll also get to learn what FAFO parenting is. It was a new term for me, but I gotta say, I'm here for it. Okay, let's get on with the show. Hey, Dave, welcome to Focus Forward.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I'm so glad to have you here. And we connected through one of our outreach coordinators, right? Was that Rose?
Yep, Rose. Yeah. She is my contact with your company. So I work with a lot of kids with executive skills deficits and young adults. So I always direct them right to Rose, who kind of figures out what they need and we collaborate, and it's fantastic.
Yeah, she's great. I love her. all right. So can you tell us a little bit more about what you do and, you know, kind of your background and
sure.
What you do and what you love the most about it?
Sure. So my training is in school psychology. So I went to graduate school for school psychology. So a lot of that training is based on assessment and intervention with school-related difficulties or issues, learning, attention, behavior, socialization. And most school psychologists work within the schools and the public system. I ended up working at a private school right out of grad school for about 4 or 5 years. And then after that, or during that time, I got licensed and then have been working in private practice now for 16 years about, but working with kids for over 20 years. Originally, when I was in grad school, I was a teacher at a school for children with severe emotional behavioral difficulties. And right now what I'm doing, it's not just the assessment intervention. So most people think of that as like, you know, testing to figure out if a kid has ADHD or autism or a learning disability or whatnot, but some of the treatment as well. So that might be direct therapy. It might be working with the family and collaborating with the school and the other stakeholders. And the whole goal, like my whole kind of shtick that I sell myself on the kids that maybe don't want to be there is, my job is to make sure that the kids and the families and everyone else have the skills they need, the tools they need. The more they practice and use them, the better they get. And the sooner they get to fire me. So it's similar to a coaching model, right? I always tell the kids that understand or the young adults, it's almost like physical therapy, that the more you do on your own, the better those skills become. So whether it's focus, attention, executive skills, whether it's socialization, whether it's like self-regulating, self-calming, I always push those kind of approaches of the more you do on your own and practice, the better. And it's going to be a team approach, nothing in isolation. So we were trained very much using like a medical model of you go to a hospital, you get a team that works. Where it's the same thing here. We look at it as well, you have your executive functioning coach, you have your tutor, you have mom, you have your therapist, you have your school personnel, and we're all working and collaborating, and you're doing what you need. We will see growth. So that's my kind of whole philosophy and idea. And I just actually wrote a book. I published my first book based on the
Congratulations.
idea of thank you. Like the whole goal is these kids that we get, and I'm a father, I have two kids, like all of a sudden they turn 18 or they go off to college, and we have to be comfortable enough knowing that, okay, like they can survive and succeed. Oh my gosh. So my selling point too to families and kids is you have to develop these skills now when you're younger, where it's safe to fail and you could get a lot more support and collaborate with whoever's around you than when you're in your 20s, 30s, and 40s. So a lot of it's preventative.
I love
So,
it. Yeah.
yeah.
I love that. That pr being proactive instead of reactive.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really and school psychology especially, they really push that on us and it makes sense, right? It makes sense. I tell them health-wise, it's a lot easier to prevent cancer than to cure it.
Yeah,
And we have
right.
the tools. We know what works. We know if there's any executive deficits, we know that if you go through coaching and you practice these skills and you get whatever accommodations you need, that'll work. You can prevent school dropout and failure and all the emotional and behavioral things that come with it.
Yep. Yeah, it's so true. And I mean, I see that so often in my clients when they come in. You can kind of tell, which kids have been working on that and which kids are just beginning to work on that. So, yeah.
It's funny the way you can usually tell they use certain vocabulary or they bring up certain techniques or tools that they use. And I always love to find out who they learned it from so I could go back and be like, you'd be so proud. Like they're talking about like using their prioritization sheet and the way that they like organize it that you taught them in fourth grade. Like they still use that 7 years
That's awesome.
later.
That's a
Yeah.
good idea. I've never done that.
Oh,
I should
yeah.
ask them,
Oh,
write them a little
I.
on a little email.
Well, I look at it too, very similar in the fields, when you think of executive coaching and anything that you're learning a skill where, like I was saying before, the more you use the skill and you really internalize it, it just becomes automatic. Then it's not a chore. Then it's not like, oh my God, like I don't want to do this. It takes so much work. Like, no, once it's automatic, you're actually saving time.
Yeah, and that's where that practice comes in, right? Because in order for it to be automatic, our brains have to be able to say, "Oh, I've done this before. I know how to do
That's it.
this."
And especially now we have a lot of, I guess there are different factors that make our jobs more difficult or that make it a little more difficult for kids. So the technology piece, obviously, in social media and gaming, and then the overscheduling, the helicopter parents, all this, where a lot of kids kind of miss out on time, or they always talk about not having enough time, need more free time. So I love getting them to understand, like, well, if you learn to work more efficiently,
Yeah.
you'll have more time. I love the, this is kind of a tangent, but it makes sense. And I explain it to the kids where Warren Buffett talks about time as the only commodity you can't get back. Always make more money. You can always get another job and get more things. You can even get like other relationships. You can never get time back. So
And
once
that's
kids understand it, they start to implement it and be like, all right, like this makes sense. I could save time here by using time a little wiser here.
And I feel like that's such a hard lesson to learn at that age because you feel like you have an infinite amount of time because you're young and you're just kind of surrounded by these old people that you imagine you will just never be. Like, I can't believe that I'm the age I am now because I
Same.
never thought I would be. So what strategies do you use to help kids learn to see that perspective that time is passing, and then how do you get them to practice
I
that
find
appreciation?
with any, even kids, young adults, whatever age, when you give them options, it seems to work better. And I found it because most teachers, all they're doing, it's just direction, right? It's do this, do this, do this. Nobody's asking, well, what do you think? There's different things you could do. What sounds like you would probably be more into this or actually utilize this? Almost like somebody that hates going to the gym. If you give them options and say, well, would you rather do group stuff or would you rather work like one-on-one? Would you rather do more like cardio based or do you want weights? Do you want a sport or do you want, you can get exercise however you want. The more you buy into it and feel like you have the choice and decision-making power, the more vested you'll be. So I always relay that to the parents. And it usually works, because they're choosing it. The hard part for us is we now have to make sure we have the structure built into place that if they don't, there's some kind of natural consequence. Also, if they do, they feel the positive effects of it. So when they decide, you know what, I'm going to do the work during study hall instead of watch Netflix or take a nap. Then when they get home and they go over with parents, if parents still like need to check in on their work, which is still amazing to me because we didn't grow up with that. Like,
No.
right? Like my parents weren't able to go on a computer and be like, hey, I see you have 2 zeros here. Like they didn't. I just, I was
I don't
still
think
like,
I don't think I talked to my mom for the first month of
oh,
college.
I didn't talk. I think my parents, they dropped me off at college day one and I saw them again in my city where I went to school on graduation day. Like that was it. But I was still like back in the day, like changing my grades on report cards with a pencil. So parents are able to now, like see it and go over with their kids and say, hey, you got your work done. Now you have free time. Now you wanted to see your friends. You wanted to go out on a school night or do, sure. Like you now get the benefit of using, the strategy you chose, which is you work better in the school building versus home, which I, right? Like I know your point. Like I'm finding more and more kids. And young adults that once they are out of that setting, their brain just does not get back into work mode, which is it's ironic now that after COVID, the virtual workforce has boomed. I'd love to see studies on the productivity of people working from home versus when they're in the office. So I work with the kids again, like when you say strategies with some of them for something like that, it might be, you have to work somewhere not at home. So if mom decides 2 days a week, we're going to stop and get you a snack at Jamba Juice or Starbucks or whatever, and we'll get your work done there. And the sooner you get your work done there, if that works for you, the sooner we get home and you could play Roblox or get online or watch Netflix or whatever. Or if it's go to a library, or if it's get your work done in the car or the bus, like you have an hour bus ride. Right. If it comes back to time again, like use your time. But I remind the kids, if you're using that hour time on the bus to take a nap or watch TV or go on TikTok, that's your free time. So you're using your time. You're choosing to do that. So when you get home, now you have to work. You already had your break. So it makes sense to them when you really lay it out like very specifically and coherently and pragmatically to them, where they see it like, oh yeah, I had my free time. Like, yeah, you did. Like when you say I went to school and I worked all day, you didn't. You had an hour and a half study hall, so you didn't work all day.
I mostly work with college students, and we talk a lot about how it's so much more fun to I mean, you have so much more fun at a social event or a club meeting or something if you aren't sitting there thinking, oh, I really should be writing that essay right now.
Right.
So if you can, you know, that first time that they experience that of getting the thing done first and then being able to do the social thing, whatever that is,
Yeah.
guilt free, like, oh, that actually feels really good. So it's the same for younger students too. And I just said to my son the other day who had to practice. He plays the violin, so he had to practice for an upcoming audition. And I said, wouldn't you enjoy your computer video game so much more if you weren't thinking the whole time, oh, I really should be practicing instead? Like, just do it, just get it over with. I mean, it's easy for us to say, but once they try it, like, oh yeah, it actually does feel really good.
I like to figure out with the kids, and I know in the executive functioning field, they do this often, like where the deficits lie. So I love to ask kids, like, is it harder to initiate? So is it harder to pick up the violin? Or is it harder? Like, I pick it up, but after 2 minutes, I'm like, oh my God, like, this is like, I hate this. This is terrible. And then we figure out, okay, well, what do you need to work on and what's going to work for you? So with a lot of more the young adults kids I work with, the initiating is a little tougher. And they say, like, once I get started, I'm fine. So we figure out ways. Well, let's see where you're going to initiate. Like, let's see what works for you. So some strategies, like you asking, some it's just do one. It's almost like limiting and really shortening where the finish line is. Saying,
Yes.
you just have to do one. Just read this first sentence or do this one math problem, then you can be done. And you more often than not, after they do the one or after they get started, you say, do you want to do another? Like, you know, that only took like 45 seconds. Like,
Yeah.
you want to do one more? You want, like, and then all of a sudden, like, fine, I'll just do like a few more. Now they're done with half of it.
Yeah.
And you're like, you just finished half of this. It took 4 minutes.
Yeah.
Where so many parents come in, they're like, it took 20 minutes to get them started and 5 minutes to complete it. Like, we wasted all this
Yeah.
time.
Yeah.
And again, I get back to the time thing, like shorten the task, right? Like just shorten where that finish line is. Or use strategies such as like, let's change it up a little. Like, all right, we did math, sick of math. All right, like let's do this fun activity. All right, fun, fun, fun. Okay, done with that. All right, let's get back to this activity. So like switching it often helps also with kids, especially with ADHD. It kind of prevents them from getting boring and they like the multitasking.
Yep. It's
And
exciting.
I, right? Like, and I always remind them, like, you do it all the time with technology. Like, you're gaming while you have your phone on and like the TV on or music is on. So, you could do the same thing productively where, like, well, I have to make these note cards and I have to work on this project and I have to, you know, go through this Quizlet or whatever else.
Yep.
Like, yeah, you don't have to, it doesn't have to be linear. You
Yeah.
know, if your brain works that way where it's like, I can focus on this for like 7 minutes and after 7 minutes, I don't know. It's just elsewhere.
Yeah.
Like, all right, let's switch to the task that's more hands-on. You have to draw this picture to go with your bio something or whatever. And a lot of them start finding like, oh yeah, that works. Like I lay on the floor and I have the computer and I have this here and I'm just kind of switching and it keeps me going. And I'm like, yeah, like you need the dopamine. You need
Yeah.
that constant, you know, change and new and it works.
Yep. I always tell this funny story about that, like just shortening the task. And so a really common tool that we use at Beyond BookSmart, we call 5 minute goals. So you just,
Okay.
you know, do the thing for 5 minutes. And
Yeah.
so I said to my daughter who plays the cello, did not
Oh.
want to practice. She did not want to practice the cello. And I said, just do it for 5 minutes. And she said, no, I don't want to use that tool because it'll work.
Smart
So
kid.
yeah, she is. So, but it's true. You know, that really does work. You do have to kind of trick yourself for a minute by
Yeah.
saying, yeah, this will probably work. But you're right. It's the starting, it's the getting going. And then I
Yeah.
love how you mentioned the switching too. I really encourage my clients to look for like diminishing returns. Are you just
Right.
sort of like not, your effort isn't really, you know, producing what excuse me, it isn't producing what you're what you want what you need it to be producing anymore. So switch to something else. Who says you have to start something and finish it in one go?
And when you really think about eventually, because again, like my whole goal, I tell the kids, I'm like, I want to make sure you have the skills necessary to succeed later on and the environment which it's in. Most jobs you guys get, it's not going to be, I have to do this task from start to finish with no distractions and whatever else. That is not how most jobs are. That is not the workforce. You are multitasking and you are having to prioritize and troubleshoot and problem solve and communicate all the time. So I love kind of teaching the parents too and letting them know, like, if they can do this in the real world, let them do it now, whatever it looks like. Even with the little ones, as simple as if we have to take the page and highlight and say, you're just going to do these three. That's it. Once you're done with these three, like, show me. Then there's the praise and the feedback and everything and the high five and, like, awesome. Like, do you think you could do the next one or should we switch to reading? So I kind of look at it, the younger they are, the more support and structure and guidance. But as they get older, it's the more we're giving them the tools and we want them to use it. I also love one strategy I've been using a lot with kids for years is it's very hard to understand these concepts because they're abstract. So terms like effort and motivation, like, I try to quantify it, especially I work with a lot of kids that are a little more black and white or rigid or just very science-minded, math-oriented, where I said, like, this task, you're going to need 80% effort for about 10 minutes. And that's about as much as you can do. That's where your endurance is right now. This other one where you're just copying notes or filling whatever, it's like 40% effort. You can do that for 30 minutes. And you can have music on in the background because you don't need your full attention and engagement and whatever else. So then they're better able to kind of create their own priorities and time and everything, what it looks like on, all right, if you're going to be reading a hard level text, you're not going to do an hour straight where they try to commit to, oh no, like I'll read it all tonight. I'll read the two chapters of like Shakespeare, whatever. I'm like, yeah.
No.
Right. And I'm very candid. That's one thing, like with the kids, you know, I use very open language and like, this is how I talk to them. So it's very comfortable, and I could call them out like, I know you think you're going to do that. Like, you've never done that. You're not going to start now. But,
Nobody can do that.
right. Like, I don't, yeah. Like, let's think of it realistically. Like, this is really what it might look like. And what tools do you think work for you? Like, what have you done before that work? So, a lot in the school psych world, it's very evidence-based. So, it's all
Love that.
about data,
I love
right?
it.
It's not about feelings. It's not whatever. Like, what have you? Well, you know, when the teacher reads it aloud, like, it's a lot easier for me. Like, okay, cool. So maybe we do need audiobook, or like maybe you need to read aloud to yourself, or maybe you need to do some social learning or group work, or you and mom, or you and dad. But you just sitting quietly and just like reading at a desk, like that's probably not going to work right now.
I have an adult client who I actually interviewed for the podcast. Her name is Helena, if anyone listened to that episode. But she is super data driven, and so she does all these like data collection experiments for herself. And so when she's struggling with tasks that she's struggling to get started with, she sets a timer for 2 minutes, then 4 minutes, then 8 minutes, then 16 minutes, like
Oh,
that.
wow.
And she checks in like how she's doing at that moment. Like, is she struggling? Is it easy? How's she feeling about it? And she has learned that by 8 minutes, she's fully in the task, and all of the fears that she had about it being hard or too hard to start or anything are gone. And so I love that you mentioned that it's really data driven, because I think it really is worth it to pay attention to those things. Maybe you don't write it down and keep a, like a spreadsheet like she does, but just really paying attention to those kinds of things really informs us and gives us the power to make these decisions, which gives us, when I'm saying us, I also mean the kids,
Yeah.
that autonomy that we need to feel confident. No, I know that I can do sustained reading for 30 minutes, and then I'm going to need a break or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Giving them the power and the knowledge, like, hey, pay attention to this stuff because you'll be able to learn. I love that.
I usually, with the younger kids, it's very funny when they get brought in. Like, do you know why you're here? I'm sure their parents told them something, or the parents look at me and we're like, I don't know what to tell them. Like, so I tell them, like, my job's to find what works best. It's very simple. That's it. The goal is this, some kind of success or improvement, whether it's socially, behaviorally, executive skills, whatever. We're going to find what works. And then once we find what works, we're going to really strengthen that. And part of it might be a little bit of flexibility of maybe this works this time, but not other times. We're going to make sure that we communicate with others and collaborate and get what we need. And the whole goal is, again, like when I'm thinking the future is once they go off on their own, whether it's the workforce or college or military, whatever, you know, they can solve whatever they need. They know what works best for them. They can reach out to others, ask for help, self-advocate, monitor and manage their own kind of output and feelings and expectations, and be successful.
Yeah.
That's our job, right? Like as parents, professionals, caregivers, that's the job.
Yeah. And you can start all that so young. You know, it's not going to look like, well, you need to decide what you're going to have for dinner tonight, but you know, it's you can have like prompt kids to really think about, well, what was that like for you, or what do you think would work, or what has worked in the past, even when they're little.
It's interesting that these skills still really aren't taught in the schools. So a lot of it depends on parents, professionals like yourself and coaches. And sometimes they get some of it in these community-based programs. So like I know like Boy Scouts, Girl Scouts does a lot when you're ranking up. Both my kids are in Scouts, so I just know it firsthand. And it's funny looking at it from my perspective when they're working on these projects, it's all those skills, right? It's amazing when they're working on certain awards or badges. And we're told by the leaders, at the older they get, you're hands off. They just come to you for help. Do not do this for them. And the purpose is not whether they succeed or fail in the task, it's the process. It's what are they learning through the steps. So unfortunately, like in the schools, it's all about the grade. It's not about the skill. So I know we were talking earlier about the idea of like growth mindset and finding what works and what doesn't. So whether it's some kind of perceived failure of, well, that didn't work with my boss. Well, you learn that you don't work well with bosses who lead that way or who have that type of structure. That's good. Like now you know. Now you need to find this. Or you learned studying this way didn't produce the results you want. Kind of like you saying the data. You tried cramming the night before three different times, and each time it didn't work. You either got too stressed, you couldn't remember it, or that was not a test to cram for because it was more about like analyzing and concepts, not just memorization, and that just didn't work for you. So it's getting back to the kids and saying, all right, like we still learned. Even if it didn't go the way we wanted, we learned something. They do it a lot in sports. I don't know
Yes.
if you watch much, and in music too, since you have two
Yeah.
musicians in there.
I don't generally watch a lot of sports, but our hometown made it to the Little League World Series and just on Sunday played for third place and won. They almost made it to being number one in the States,
Are
but
you in Connecticut?
yes.
I was watching and following them.
Oh, yeah. And so yesterday I went to the town party. They had a parade for them and then the town party downtown. And they were talking about how they may not have won the whole thing, but they just learned so much and went through that whole experience together. And I just think I was thinking with my executive function coach hat on yesterday about how lucky those kids are to have been on a te in a team sport or any kind of like team activity, whether it's an orchestra or a team sport or some kind of club or like Odyssey of the Mind or something like that, or Scouts. But just to be first to be a part of that and then to be working so hard towards this goal and not quite get where you wanted to be, but being able to like reflect and say, all right, well, I didn't get the ultimate goal, but look at all of this that I got. I
It
was I
can
kept
relay.
tearing up. I
Oh,
couldn't help but tear
absolutely.
up.
It happens to me. I'll cry at a commercial. Like I get emotional. I like get touched by things. I get very passionate about things where I try to relate to the kids. Like life sometimes it's going to be hard and you're not going to get your way. And I know the last 40 years, culturally, we've really pushed this whole idea of self-esteem. And that's where like a lot of the helicopter parenting has come in, along with like the fear, and I don't want my kids upset and just be happy, and I just want them to be happy. Where I really try to focus on the failure and the struggle and the pain and all that else. That's where a lot of learning takes place too. In fact, sometimes more, because unfortunately, like those negative feelings you have and everything else create better change and longer lasting change. So all it takes is, oh my God, like I failed this class and I have to do summer school. Like, yeah, that's tough. And instead of mom and dad screaming at the school and trying to do everything to like take that consequence away from you, it's all right, well, I'm glad you're dealing with it and it's gonna stink, but you'll get used to it and let's get through it. And what are you gonna take from it when you move on after summer school? And I have a bunch I've worked with that's exactly what happened to them. And they've come out better. And they get to the point, and the moment is very hard, but they get to the point like, I'm glad that happened then. Like it really like changed my mindset. I'm like, great. I love to validate and remind the kids, like, you know, feelings come and go. Like you're gonna be sad for a bit. That's okay. Let's just make sure you're safe. You know, don't do anything dangerous. And now you kind of get to practice that skill and letting us know, what do you need? Do you need to be left alone? Do you need to hang out with your friends? Because that kind of lessens the blow. Do you need to do something really fun and engaging? Like, let's go to, you're in, up north. So, like, whatever the theme park is up there, like Great American Adventure or blah, blah, blah. Like, yeah, let's just celebrate and do that and just whatever. Adults do the same thing, right? Like after a hard week, oh, Friday, TGIF, like we're gonna go to happy hour, we're gonna do karaoke. Like it's the same kind of thing where I love to ask the kids about their needs. When I first do intakes with them, you know, and we talk about stressors and then, well, how do you cope and what do you need, you know, each day?
I
And
love it.
that's that. There's a bit of executive skills there too, that kind of metacognition,
Yes,
self-awareness of,
yes, yes.
you know, do you need an hour a day of just mindlessly scrolling on TikTok? And what kind of TikTok videos are you watching? You know, and then it's
Yes.
funny to see the parent next to them, like, oh, I didn't know you watched that. I'm like, yeah, I love like murder mystery, Forensic Files, whatever. Like, oh, like, isn't that great? Like, here's something you could do together and maybe you could use this for something. But if you need that, great. And that's where the balance comes in, where if you're doing that, I don't want you worrying, oh, but I should be doing this essay or I should be whatever. This is your hour break. Focus on it, enjoy your time, whatever else. But when time's up and we now need to be productive or move on, whatever, now we need to make sure we're good at that. So that kind of like shifting and restarting.
And I love that you ask them what they need and not their parents what they need,
Nope.
because they're I remember when I interviewed Kenneth Ginsberg, who wrote the book Lighthouse Parenting. He said kids are the experts of their own lives. And so when we ask them that, we are also helping them practice that metacognitive thinking, which I feel like is basically what we've been talking about the whole time, and how
Pretty much.
that skill is really what's going to help kids take that next step, try the new thing,
Right.
complete the task, do the thing, is understanding, yeah, what do I need?
And modeling for them. So, one of the other strategies I talk a lot to parents about is the younger they are, the more they're going to copy you and mimic and they see what's going on. So, if it's practicing self-care, if it's starting on task, if it's having too much to do and feeling overwhelmed and breaking that down, knowing you can include them. You can say it out loud, like, oh my gosh, like we have to be at your haircut at this time, but I need to get like dinner started and you have to do homework and I have to make sure you're in bed by this time. Like that is a lot to do. Like, okay, let's figure this out. Let's break this down. So you know what? Let's collaborate. It'll be easier. Like if I do this, can you set the table for me? Then I can take time to do this. And you're six, you could set the table, like get silverware, get like whatever. I also love the idea. One thing I've really been, and I think COVID just kind of jump started it for me even more. I love kids having jobs and responsibilities.
Yes.
I've been pushing any of the kids I work with, 14 and even 12. Like, you can babysit, you could do yard work, you could take care of people's pets. Like, there's so much you could do. Where it's funny, where it's the parents that chime, well, they don't have time for work. Like, that is not true. Like,
Yes, that is not
they,
true.
like, if we look at how much time they're spending on Snapchat, TikTok, gaming, Netflix, whatever, that's probably 15 to 20 hours a week. That's a part-time job. And what I find with a lot of my kids, especially with ADHD, when they have more structured time, they use time more wisely, right? And
Yes,
where it's
absolutely.
they, it's just structured, it's organized in a way. Like, well, my shift starts at 6, it's 4, I only have 2 hours to get my work done, I better get it done. There's this new finish line boundary put in place that's a lot more firm than, oh, I don't have to turn this into tomorrow, and I'm not, you know, I could do it whenever. Like, I, you know, stay up late, or and then it's the last minute, and then they're up late, and then, you know, I try to again figure out with them, like, does that work for you? Like, that you're only sleeping 5 hours a night. Like, I don't, this doesn't seem like the most efficient way of doing things.
I see that all the time with my college students. The students that take five classes are they it's usually easier for them to keep up with their work than the students that are taking fewer classes.
And then thinking college age, it's funny because nobody really talks to these kids again, like, practically what it's going to look like when they're in a college setting. So I remind them, like, if you take five classes, that's 3 credits each class. That means you're going to be in a classroom 15 hours a week. That's what it looks like. Now we have, like, transportation time, whatever else, let's say 20 total hours a week. You're in school with transportation, getting, coming up, that 40 hours a week. So we're cutting your time in half. Now, what you're going to have to get good at, because you're in college and I've been there, you want to go out Thursday night to Midtown, because Thursday night's the night where everyone's at Midtown and they're drinking and whatever. And usually you're not going out till 11 or 11:30, and they close everything at 2 or 2:30. But you have a class the next day at 10, and you have a quiz. And today's Tuesday. What are you, how are you going to manage this? And we really, like, and the parents are sitting there, like, you know, kind of a little concerned or not sure where this is going. I'm like, this is reality. Like, they're going to college. They're going to get a fake ID or do whatever, or they're going to drink, or, like, this is what I'm assuming. I want to make sure they know how to prepare in advance. Monitor themselves when they go out so they don't get, like, go overboard. Maybe leave a little early that night. Make sure to drink enough and take some ibuprofen, and are able to wake up, feel okay, and they're prepared for their quiz, and they can succeed. That's real life executive skills in the real world. And
We can
I,
hope as much
right?
as we can hope as hard as we can that they that won't be what they're doing, that they're going to bed o'clock, you know, like 10 o'clock and
Sure.
getting up at 6 and going to the gym. But
Yeah.
some kids do that, but a lot of kids are not doing
Right.
that yet.
And you want them also engaged. So I tell them, like, I want you to have the full experience. I don't, again, I push balance. So, like, I want you to have time with friends and hanging out and alone time and clubs and activities and the part-time job and dating and all that. But yeah, I want you in class, and I want you working hard and networking and building connections and moving forward. So we
And the
really
balance,
focus. Oh, sorry.
I was just going to say that balance really is so important because I think the kids who are the sort of like opposite of what you might think of, like the kids who only focus on academics, they're really missing out on some critical social skills that they can be building for the future. So finding that balance is so important.
That's one of my main areas I really focus on with kids. Maybe because personally, like, I was always on this end of the spectrum, extroversion wise. Like, I was the kid that the teacher had to keep moving because whoever they put me next to, like, I'm just talking to them. Like, just want to network and build connections and make friends. Where, unfortunately, the last 30 years, it's gotten harder, right? There's more reliance on technology and texting. There's not enough free play and free communication, open communication, where I remind them, like, people are hiring you, not your resume. They're going to interview you. And most of you have pretty similar resumes. Nobody's going to stand out so much where, like, oh, I interned for Bill Gates and did this amazing thing like that. Usually is not the case. It's going to be your relatable skills, your personal skills, and it's going to be how well you're connected and have connected with others, and what have you done? So, thinking of like the ADHD realm, because that's kind of the world we're in, it lends itself nicely. So, you're not telling the ADHD kid you have to fit in the box of you just need to study and get good grades. Like, well, that doesn't work for me. Like, I'm a people person. Like, I like to talk. I'm chatty. I'm hyperactive. Like, good. Let's use that. Let's use that skill to our advantage. So I want you connecting with people. I want you having the internships and talking to whoever and, talking to the teacher, build relationships with the teacher. You'd be surprised like how that could benefit you and what it might lead to. They might like you and all of a sudden just say like, do you want to be like a TA for me next semester? Like, you're really fun to work with.
I just was talking to one of my college students who got his senior project because he had gotten to know a professor. And so he just had to go up to the professor and ask. And the professor said, yeah, join my project.
And I really love the idea when we're working with kids, teens, young adults, is finding what their strengths are and really letting them know and making sure they know how to use their strengths to their advantage. But also while understanding, listen, this is a little harder for you when we're thinking of this kind of growth mindset idea of you can improve that. Now, you might never be an extrovert. Or you might never be able to sit down with a book and read for 4 straight hours, but we can improve these skills through practice, through kind of scaffolding and this slow exposure. And it's going to look a little different. But if the goal is I want to get better at something, then they're more apt to do it because it's not this perfectionistic idea of, well, I'm never going to be able to like do this thing perfectly. Like, well, it's not about that. It's just about improvement. So if you can initiate a conversation with a professor and talk for a few minutes, and you weren't able to do that last year, you don't have to become best friends with them, but you've already improved from where you were. So that's great. And that's where, like you said, that's where the esteem comes in. And then it promotes itself like, oh, like, okay, like I got this in my bag now. Like I could keep doing this. Like, yeah, you can keep doing this.
And isn't it cool? Isn't it so cool for us as someone on their team working with them? We get to see that and witness that growth. Like first we maybe had to help them write a script for what they were going to say, and then we had to remind them to do it. And then the next thing we know, they're like, "Oh yeah, oh no, I already did that. I already reached out to them."
I remind the families a lot that the best incentive, really, it's that feeling they have, right? It's that esteem, it's that confidence. And you could point it out to them. You don't have to buy them anything. You don't have to go above and beyond praise. You could tell them, like, you should be so proud of yourself. And again, it's reinforcing. And as a parent, I have to remind them, like, we grew up in a very punitive-based system. We put your name on the board if you do something wrong. And if you get 3 check marks, you don't go to recess or you get a note home. Like, there was no positive. It was just, if you do what you're supposed to do, there's just no negative consequence. Right. Where I have to remind them, like, I'm data, data all the way. And the data shows, like, the praise, the positive, the incentive, the good feeling, like, all of that works better. Now, I'm not saying there shouldn't be any negative consequences. And they found, like, in the ADHD world, that kind of response cost, it does work. But I also love the new trend in parenting, that FAFO parenting. No?
I don't know this one.
So it's F around and find out.
I love it.
So it's really, it's positive parenting. It's natural consequences. The consequence is the consequence. Not your yelling, not your grounding, not your give me your phone. It's, well, I'm not taking my jacket. Well, you're going to be cold if you don't. I don't care. Okay. And 10 minutes later, oh my God, I'm cold. Yeah. That's the consequence. I'm not mad at you. You're not grounded. We're not turning around to get your jacket because you chose whatever. Now you'll know for next time, I should probably grab a jacket.
Yep.
So it's really, and I remind this to parents a lot, especially, you know, the consequence, it's not about you. It's not about like, oh, I'm so disappointed or I'm so angry. Like that's for maybe something a child is choosing to do to purposefully hurt someone or whatever. But that again, like that's pretty rare.
Yeah. Yep.
So it's more the consequence, like, hey, lights off at 10 p.m. and if you didn't get your work done, you could wake up early and do it. Or you're gonna have to let the teacher know, like, I chose to wait too long to get my work done. I couldn't get it done. And she might say, well, I'm gonna let you make it up, but you're gonna get a lower grade. Or you could decide to stay here while everyone else is at recess and you could get it done. Just like in the real world, if I tell my boss, hey, I didn't get this project done, like, well, better wake up early and get it done before it's due.
Yeah. Yep.
Right? It's not, well, I'm disappointed and you give me your phone.
Yeah, right.
Right? Like the consequence is like I'm gonna have to stay late at work. I didn't get it done before the workday. Like, oh man. Like, yeah. That's so if anyone asks you or if you start to hear it, that's FAFO parenting.
I like it. I
I've heard
like
it.
it a
It's been on
lot.
CNN and
Oh,
MSNBC. Oh yeah,
how have
like
I missed this? Because I love the name of it.
it's catching some steam.
Yeah. Oh, it's good. I
I
really
think
like it.
it's a reaction to
Yes.
helicopter parenting
It is a react. I
is what it
agree.
is. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which
Yeah.
it's that's what happened to us, right? Like you don't, you know, hey, you're biking too fast, like you're gonna
Yeah.
fall, and then they
Yeah.
fall, but like
Yeah. Yep. FAFO.
FAFO, like, all right, oh my leg hurts. Yeah.
Yeah. I love it. All right. One more question before we wrap up.
Sure.
How do you, how for parents who might feel a little bit anxious about letting go or
Yeah.
you know, adopting a more FAFO approach to parenting, how do you support them and what advice do you have?
I usually try to look at it again, like very practically of let's dig in. What are you most afraid of? Right? Like, let's see what is it failure? Is it safety? Is it their emotional state? Like, well, you know, if he doesn't text his friends, then they're going to forget about him and then he won't have friends, whatever else. Like, one, we have to look at it as with our teacher head on. We have to teach them these skills and instill these skills and make sure they're doing it without our prompting, so it becomes innate. So if we look at it as a skill can be learned, it can be taught, it can be practiced. Also, we can start small. It doesn't have to be this big thing. It could be these baby steps. So if it's, well, I can't let my kid bike to the mall and walk with friends, like he'll get hit by a car, he'll get kidnapped. I hear this like all the time. And I live in a very nice area where I'm like, really? Like your kid's gonna get kidnapped, like in Boca Raton, Florida, like at the mall with five friends. And he's like bigger than I am. But again, like I try not to invalidate and be like, okay, let's make sure your kid knows how not to get kidnapped. And if you need to, for your own peace of mind, bike with them to the mall a few times and watch them and see how they do it. If that helps your anxiety, sure. And then I have to convince the parent or the kid when the kid's like, I'm not biking with them, like, listen. You want to go to the mall by yourself with friends. I want that too. This is the compromise we have to make because we need mom not texting you every 5 minutes. Are you alive? Are you alive? Did anyone take you?
Yeah.
So we use a combination of like, let's compromise, let's meet middle of the road here. Let's kind of do a little exposure-based therapy. And like again, like the scaffolding of let's go from a lot of support and kind of hovering to slowly wean off. So for that example, it might be mom is going to wait in the food court. She's not going to follow you around. And you're going to check in with her every hour and just walk by. You don't have to talk to her, just give her like, you know, thumbs up or send her a selfie, whatever. And eventually she's going to let you go by yourself with friends. And you can apply that to any scenario.
Yeah.
And it's the same exact thing. It's, I'm really nervous. It's like, okay, like, it's almost like that, you know, I teach, I do, we
We
do,
do,
you
you
do,
do.
right? Like
Yeah.
in school, like let's do it together. Then, like, all right, let me observe, let me see how you did. Then, like, okay, you do, let's see how that worked. That's much easier, I find, than just saying to the parent, they're old enough, you need to not worry. That's a you issue. The kid's fine because they won't.
Especially, I think, and a lot of that is not parents' fault because there's so much fear-based messaging out there,
Yes.
and how, you know, it just, I just did a LinkedIn post on this recently, and about how all of this fear-based messaging that comes from the media,
Yeah.
mostly, makes as a parent who I do try to like really give my kids the. Or help my kids learn the skills to be very independent. Sometimes I feel like, oh my God, am I a bad parent? Because I question my choices because I'm just accidentally becoming, you know, impacted by this fear-based messaging out there.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, your kid's gonna get kidnapped when the data says, no, your kid is not gonna get
Correct.
kidnapped. And so, or also our past experiences. Like I have a family experience. So I am very nervous about my kids being on the road, walking on the road, riding their bikes. And so I'm, you know, projecting my traumatic experience in the past on my kids' experience now. And so there's so many things as parents that we are like battling,
Yeah.
you know, our own experiences, the news, and everything. And so how wonderful that you and people like you and hopefully people like me are
Yeah.
also supporting these parents so that they can feel better about how they are parenting their kids.
And I try to remind the child who gets very frustrated because they want the freedom and the independence and everything else that, you know, this is all with love and care and nervousness. It's not about they don't trust you,
Yeah.
because that's often what they say, like, well, you don't believe me, you don't trust me,
Yeah.
whatever. We say, it's not, because every parent will say, it's not you, it's the world. It's not you as a driver, it's the other drivers. It's not this, it's the other people. I'm like, but your child's gonna have to live in the world. So they're gonna have to learn to deal with the other drivers and the strangers and the whoever else. So if we teach them the skills and we know she or he knows how to be safe and avoid and prevent further harm or whatever else, then we could sleep at night when they're out with friends or when they're in college. Because that's another thing that we want to make sure we're not just tracking their phone at 2 in the morning when they're in college 2,000 miles away from us.
Yeah. And I think it really, this part of the conversation really speaks to how important it is for parents to get the support that they need to. So, like, if you're listening and you are really struggling with anxiety about your kids, then, you know, reach out for help. You know, if your child has a person that they're working with, like Dave or I or someone, ask them, like, do you know of a therapist or somebody that might be able to help, or ask your primary care physician. It's really important to make sure that you are supported as well so that
Yeah.
you can help your kids, you know, be successful in the world, like everything we've been talking about.
Absolutely. Yeah. And thank you. I'm so glad that we were able to connect and
Yeah.
talk about these topics and just share information, because unfortunately, there's a lot of information, maybe too much. So I hear a lot of things from like Dr. Google, or
Yeah.
I heard on TikTok,
Yeah. You gotta be careful.
where, right?
Yeah.
Where sometimes that becomes problematic. We're like, well, how do you know what to believe and who do you know what to listen to?
Yeah. Yep.
Okay.
Yep. Well, can you tell us more about your book and more
Oh,
about your
sure.
practice and where people can find you if they're interested in
So
reaching
the
out?
book is called Raising Future Adults. It's on Amazon, Barnes and Noble, all the online e-tailers. You could go to raisingfutureadults.com and you'll see a link to the book, bio, what it's about. It is based on like 20 plus years working with kids, family, teens, and it's over 50 different topics, articles with very specific strategies for each one, dealing with behavior, emotional competence, social skills, building independence, school-related mental health, technology. So it's got a lot of meat in it. I work in South Florida. So I'm licensed in Florida, so I can technically online see anyone in the state of Florida.
Cool.
But I work in South Florida and my private practice, and I'm one of eight, and we specialize in all different things, different ages, and different situations. And my specialty is more like kids, teens, young adults. So the assessment wise, and kind of like doing the testing and figure out like, well, what's going on here? And then the intervention piece. So I love working with kids on ways to reduce and deal with anxiety, social skills related issues, and even some of the executive skills that kind of come along with it. And that's where I collaborate with you guys and say, hey, I can deal with this part, but I think coaching would be a really nice add-on to what we're doing.
Cool. Yeah, I love it when my clients are working with an additional person. It's
Yeah.
really great. All right. Well, thank you so much, Dave. I really enjoyed this, and hopefully the listeners learned a lot because it's just packed full of good stuff.
Yeah, thank you, Hannah. Yeah, I'm so glad that you're doing this. And I'm, as you could tell, like I like to talk. So, like,
Perfect.
this is part of my self-care during the day where I get to connect with someone and like be an extrovert.
Yes, I am with you. That's why I'm doing this
So,
podcast.
thank you.
Yeah, thank you again. I have two major takeaways from this conversation with Dave Kraske. First, independence and stronger EF skills are built when kids are allowed to face challenges with support, not when we try to protect them from every struggle. It's in those safe, scaffolded moments of trial and error that they grow confidence and resilience. And when we protect them from everything difficult, we deny them opportunities to learn skills they'll need when we're not around. And second, you really don't need complicated systems to make a difference. It can feel that way, but we really just need simple, practical strategies, like, as Dave says, shortening the finish line on a task, leaning in on natural consequences, and helping kids learn to value their time. These can all go a long way in building executive function skills and independence, and we parents benefit too. I was so happy to be able to share Dave's advice with you today. Remember that this episode can be part of the journey towards finding help, but is not a substitute for medical or mental health advice. If you have questions or concerns about ADHD or any other diagnosis, please reach out to your doctor, your child's teacher, or a school psychologist, or another qualified professional. If you have any thoughts on today's episode, I would love to hear from you at podcast@beyondbooksmart.com. And thank you so much for helping us spread the word about executive function skills. Sharing the podcast and leaving a review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify really do make a difference for us. So thank you for doing that. And you can also sign up for our subscriber email, in which we share resources and other information related.